If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The T-Biz Podcast delivers T-News that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
The T-Biz Podcast and blog connect you directly to experts in the tea lands. Listen as their voices reveal the news, innovations, cultural insights, and consumer trends that most impact the industry. Paired with Tea Journey, a digital magazine for tea enthusiasts, the T-Biz portal is a global resource for everyone who loves tea. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. The holiday retail outlook dims in the U.S. ahead of the 2025 season. Asian tea origins negotiate trade treaties with the U.S., and nanoplastic research likely overstates concentrations of particles in tea. Plus, how does one choose what tea to drink? The answer is both simple and profound. 101 teas to steep before you die is far more than a bucket list compiled by four respected tea experts with impeccable credentials. In 256 pages, this book distills a millennium of tea heritage into 101 unforgettable cups. It is both a love letter to the Camellia sinensis and a practical guide to brewing and enjoying every style of tea. Each profiled tea is chosen for its flavor, story, and cultural significance. The authors invite us, as trusted companions, to rediscover familiar favorites, explore rare treasures, and understand how tea connects culture, science, ethics, and pleasure in a single cup. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
Consumer spending forecasts for the 2025 holiday season have cooled noticeably since T-Biz last reported on retail trends in late summer. Updated projections from the National Retail Federation and industry trackers, including eMarketer, show a growing caution among shoppers and sellers alike, marking the weakest seasonal outlook in 3 years. The NRF now expects holiday retail sales to grow just 2-3%, down sharply from the 5% pace predicted earlier this year. Persistent inflation, higher borrowing costs, and a cooling labor market, where job openings have fallen to their lowest level since 2021, are eroding consumer confidence. NRF's chief economist warns that while consumers continue to spend, they are, quote, more selective and increasingly value-driven. According to Deloitte's 2025 Holiday Retail Survey, total U.S. holiday spending is projected at $1.56 trillion, up a modest 3.1% year-over-year compared with last year's 5.8% gain. Deloitte also found that 70% of consumers plan to spend the same or less as they did in 2024 as credit card balances and everyday costs climb. Online sellers face their own headwinds. A recent eMarketer analysis reports that direct-to-consumer and specialty e-commerce brands are entering the season under pressure from tariffs, ad tech disruptions, and data privacy rules that have made digital marketing more expensive and less precise. Many small retailers are trimming holiday ad budgets or delaying inventory purchases among uncertainty over shipping costs and the impact of new U.S. import duties. Non-store sales, including e-commerce and mail order, are expected to slow to 7% growth after 2 years of 9 to 10% growth, according to Bain forecasts. D2C's share of total U.S. e-commerce sales is expected to be 19.2%, according to a May 2025 eMarketer forecast. For tea merchants, these macro trends translate into a more cautious but still opportunity-rich landscape. Shoppers are expected to seek smaller, meaningful gifts focused on health, comfort, and authenticity, categories where premium tea performs well. Retailers that emphasize craftsmanship, sustainable sourcing, and personal storytelling stand to fare better than those competing on price alone. Still, analysts warn that the 2025 holiday season will test margins and marketing agility across the beverage and specialty food sectors. With household budgets tightening and promotions starting earlier than ever, the key to success may be simplicity. Clear messaging, curated assortments, and a focus on quality over quantity. Business Insight. Half of all shoppers plan to start buying earlier to spread out costs, according to PricewaterhouseCoopers. Average U.S. household holiday budgets are projected at $1,595, down 4% from 2024. Together, these findings point to a consumer base more cautious, price-sensitive, and promotion-driven than at any time since the pandemic. New U.S. negotiations could reshape global tea flows. Washington is in deep talks with Japan, South Korea, and several tea-producing nations on renewed trade terms. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative is seeking fresh bilateral agreements that could lower tariffs on selected agricultural products, including tea, while keeping leverage over countries with large trade surpluses. For Japan, these discussions build on the existing 2020 U.S.-Japan trade agreement, but Japanese exporters say uncertainty remains high. Tea from Shizuoka and Niuji could face tariffs up to 25% if talks stall, although negotiators hope to preserve current access levels. South Korea is in a similar position, with Washington signaling that across-the-board tariffs of up to 25% could apply unless new terms are reached. For Korean producers exporting green and matcha-style teas, any deal that maintains duty-free status will be crucial to staying competitive in U.S. specialty markets. Meanwhile, a very different tariff story is unfolding in Canada. Last weekend, the White House announced a surprise 10% tariff on Canadian exports to the U.S., retaliation for what it called a hostile political advertisement aired during the World Series by Ontario's Tourism Bureau. Trade experts described the move as symbolic and largely political. Details on which goods are affected remain unclear, and so far there's no indication that tea is included. Under the USMCA trade pact, most Canadian origin products, including tea imported, blended, and re-exported from Canada, remains duty-free. Unless U.S. Customs lists tea tariff codes in a formal notice, shipments should continue under existing rates. Still, traders are watching closely since political gestures can evolve quickly into real trade barriers. Business Insight. For tea businesses, the message this week is simple. Stay alert to shifting tariff language in ongoing USTR negotiations with Japan and South Korea. Confirm rules of origin for teas moving through Canada to the U.S. to ensure USMCA compliance. And remember, in this new era of reciprocal tariffs, politics can change prices overnight. Nanoplastic research likely overstates concentrations of particles in tea. The European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, is pushing back against reports claiming that foods and drinks contain alarmingly high levels of micro and nanoplastics, A new EFSA literature review found that while microplastics do leach from food contact materials such as tea bags and ready-to-drink bottles, the actual concentrations are likely far lower than what many studies suggest. The review examined research published between 2015 and early 2025. Out of more than 1,700 papers, only 122 provided usable data. Most studies focus narrowly on bottled water, while few examine plastics in real foods. EFSA's conclusion? There's not enough reliable data to estimate how much micro or nanoplastic consumers ingest. The agency noted that most detected particles came from opening and closing plastic bottles and that, quote, data on nanoplastics were almost entirely absent, end quote. In the EFSA journal, reviewers identified methodological shortcomings across many studies, ranging from test conditions to sample preparation, leading to frequent misidentification and overcounting. For perspective, realistic estimates range from 6,000 to 20,000 microplastics per tea bag, not millions. Food Safety Magazine notes that this could translate to 20 fibers per cup of tea, depending on the bag material. EFSA now recommends that researchers tighten standards, validate test protocols, improve methods for particulate response under 1 micron, and study actual foods, not just simulants. A follow-up review is planned within 5 years, and until then, EFSA's Food Contact Materials Working Group will continue to track developments. This is the Tea Price Report for week 43, ending October 25th, 2025. This week in global tea trading, prices at the world's major auctions remain steady, with quality continuing to set the pace. In Mombasa, Kenya, lighter offerings helped PF1 leaf hold firm, while plainer types lost traction. In India, festival buying kept North India tea auctions brisk and prices stable for CTC teas. Sri Lanka's Uva seasonal and Western high grows retained premiums backed by steady demand from the Middle East and CIS markets. Indonesia's orthodox markets remain quietly firm, though Java Plains softened slightly. Globally, retail inflation is tame and the focus is squarely on quality and cup brightness as Q4 shipments move ahead. That's your Tea Price Report for week 43. For expanded coverage, visit www.teajourney.pub and select Tea Biz Tea Price Report. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and I founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change. Sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish@nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
How does one choose what tea to drink? The answer is both simple and profound. 101 teas to steep before you die is far more than a bucket list compiled by 4 respected tea experts with impeccable credentials. In 256 pages, this book distills a millennium of tea heritage into 101 unforgettable cups. It is both a love letter to the Camellia sinensis and a practical guide to brewing and enjoying every style of tea. Each profiled tea is chosen for its flavor, story, and cultural significance. The authors invite us, as trusted companions, to rediscover familiar favorites, explore rare treasures, and understand how tea connects culture, science, ethics, and pleasure in a single cup. Authors Nigel Melican, James Norwood Pratt, Maria Uspensky, and Shabnam Weber are among the world's foremost tea authorities. Melican is a global tea scientist and innovator living in Ireland. Pratt, who authored The Tea Lover's Treasury in 1982, is the beloved tea historian and America's tea sage. Maria Uspensky, founder of The Tea Spot in Denver, Colorado, is the author of Cancer Hates Tea. And Shabnam Weber, president of the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada, headquartered in Toronto, is an accomplished retailer and tea educator who created the Tea Sommelier program. Thank you, Maria and Shabnam, for joining me on the Tea Biz podcast. I must say at the outset that the four authors of this book, all of whom I know well, have produced a beautifully crafted guide that distills the world's vast tea heritage into 101 essential cups. I know and have tasted many of these teas, and thanks to your shared wisdom, I intend to try them all.
Just having someone whom we respect as the colleague in the industry say these kind of things to us, I can't tell you how that built me up on this Friday morning.
When you say to someone, "Wow, I just tried this amazing tea," you should try it. It increases demand. It encourages premiumization. It builds a genuine enthusiasm for tea, right? So let's start our discussion, Shabnam, by describing what you had in mind when you first decided to write this book.
We've written a book that I think in our minds would appeal to those people that know tea already. But I think even more than that, what we had in mind was to appeal to people that perhaps are dabbling in tea, want to know more about tea, are exploring. I think that one of the terms that I used quite often when, you know, we had sort of our authors meetings was this book needs to meet the consumer, or in this case, the reader, wherever they are in their tea journey, right? So, and we've been really careful and cognizant of being inclusive within that and not too niche, not too premium, not too much of anything, if you know what I mean.
As Shabnam pointed out, this book really is for the tea curious. And then kind of secondarily, it's for the grandmother or best friend or teacher of the tea curious, right? So anyone who might be intrigued by tea, everyone knows a tea lover. You pick it up, it feels good. It's gorgeous. It's a nice layout, good quality pages, nice photography, and it's just a pleasant book to leaf through.
One thing that I do want to mention about the book that's really important is, first of all, this is not the only 101 teas. We're not excluding anybody. There are teas, you know, I challenge people to actually sit down and narrow down their teas to 101. It's much harder than you think it is because there's so much you want to put in that actually doesn't end up in. The teas that are in this book are in no particular order. And that's another really important thing to mention. So what is labeled as number one doesn't mean that this is the number one tea for us in 101, et cetera. And that's the other thing that I really love about this book is that you can read the book from front cover to back cover. You can start from the back and go to the front. You can go in the middle and read chapter by chapter. Each chapter could actually be a standalone. So it's a, you know, again, it can meet you wherever it is that you are. If blending teas or blended teas and flavored teas, if that's the only thing you're interested in, then you're going to find information here.
One thing I loved about this book is the way it presents tasting notes. They're approachable. You don't get those over-the-top lines like subtle hints of anise or a whisper of sandalwood. Descriptions like that can lose people. Instead, you get these wonderfully human moments like Nigel Melican saying, "I drank British tea until I moved to Ireland. Now I drink berries." That one line tells you everything. And when he goes on to describe what makes berries gold blend so good, the brightness, briskness, and golden color of Rwandan tea balanced against the malty depth of Assam, you suddenly get it. You can taste it. That's what makes this book so powerful. It connects expert knowledge with real experience. And it brings tea down to earth in the best possible way.
those tasting notes being the most approachable, let's say, aspect of it. It's where our personalities get to come through. And it's very clear that we come from different angles.
Right.
And that you, which I hope then the reader would make the connection of, oh, that's fine. I may not have this heady image of this tea that this gentleman Norwood does, but I can relate to what Shabnam is saying about wanting to have this tea midway between breakfast and lunch or whatever. And that's the type of tidbits that we hope will get people interested enough to step out of, let's say, their normal repertoire and try something a little bit different.
And the tasting notes was that we didn't always necessarily agree. So in some cases, one of us actually didn't like the tea, and that was included. And I think that that was important as well.
World-famous Syrahs are mentioned, but the book does not dwell on the most expensive, most lauded teas.
You know, best is a very subjective word, and that is not something we wanted to touch at all, because, you know, what your idea of best is may be very different than my idea of best, etc. So, you know, I think that what we all in the tea world, what we all love about tea is how nuanced it is and how different a black tea from five different regions is going to be. And that really speaks to the fact that there is something out there for everybody, depending on what you like, right? I mean, you know, pigeonholing and saying that this is the only place that you must drink tea from is very exclusionary. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice within the industry to operate within that mind frame.
The way that I look at it is, of course, terroir feeds into how a plant is going to grow in a particular place. And you certainly can't get a tea leaf to taste one that's grown in Colorado the same way as it would in Japan, right? As an extreme. However, I view global origins perhaps more as a reflection of cultural tastes. So, for instance, Chinese green teas have a very, very different taste profile than Japanese green teas. And those two evolved based on cultural taste preferences. I'm not an expert taster, and I can't tell you which side of the mountain this tea came from, whether it was the leeward or the windward, or whether it was the north end of the province or the south. To me, it's those more marked differences in styles of tea that then influence what the origin is growing based on people's palates in those regions. And to me, that's the most fascinating thing about tea, are really the cultural elements that shaped each tea from each region, from each village, from each origin.
There's a lot of conversation about how we need to bring new people to tea. Was there thought given to how to make the book appealing to young tea drinkers, old tea drinkers, and new tea drinkers?
Maria will tell you that I kept saying we need to think about who our audience is, right? I want to see this book on my neighbor's bookshelf.
Yeah.
I would love it if it's on the bookshelf of people within this industry and within this world of tea. That's great. But I think the bigger success for us is that this book is on the, you know, the guy across the street who is not a tea drinker or wasn't a tea drinker. That to me is where I want to see this.
But absolutely, Shabnam. That's brilliantly said. And that is the goal. It is not going to sit on a tea person's shelf, or it could. It doesn't need to. A very experienced tea person doesn't need this book. However, anyone outside of that rarefied top of the pyramid does need this book and will enjoy this book. And this is the book that's going to open the world of tea to those who aren't reading any of those tea industry books. This is truly a tea and coffee book for the coffee table. You know, no pun intended.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.